welcome to the American Pulse. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is a show that seeks to listen, express, and amplify the voice of the American people, no matter where you live in this great nation. We are unabashedly pro-humanity, pro-freedom, and pro-America. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the American Pulse. Well, we're coming off a long sabbatical. Thank you for your patience as we figured all this out moving forward. And we're back at the microphone with a slightly different format and a different sort of rhythm. We will be doing episodes of the American Pulse once a month in 2026 with a caveat. If anyone on my team at the King County GOP or myself feels the need to get on the mic and talk to we the people, well, that's what we'll do. If these times have taught us anything, it's the necessity to be grounded in principle, yet flexible in our minds and execution. What is God asking of us right now is, I believe, a great question for both myself and the collective. And we will have some of the same elements as last year in that I will write the opening piece and conduct the interviews with our esteemed guests. However, we've added something new in that our intrepid, inspiring leader, KCGOP Chairwoman Julie Lansdowne, will do the final piece to bring it together, but also to offer blessings and grace to we the people, something that is a clear gift of hers and evident to all who have watched her lead. I'm excited for the American Pulse to be a clear signal amongst the noise and choppy waters we are certain to face in 2026, and I continue to feel blessed and honored to walk this path with all of you. Before we get to our excellent guest, man, I love talking to this man. Our conversation brought two quotes to mind that I thought were relevant for today's episode. The first is by Scottish theologian Ian McLaren, who said, quote, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle," unquote. And the other is by Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who said, quote, "Do not lose heart. We were made for these times," unquote. It's sure good to be back, you patriots. Now a word from our sponsor and on to our interview. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by The Renton Printery. From huge outdoor banners to small hard hat decals, The Renton Printery produce top quality, customizable, full color decals, business cards, letterhead, envelopes, signs, table tents, and more. The Renton Printery is a small, independent, veteran-owned business since 1957. For all your printing needs, go to www.rentonprintery.com. And now, on to our episode. My guest today is retired Brigadier General Mike Oster. Mike is a nationally recognized speaker, a best-selling author, successful entrepreneur, and a performance excellent coach with a mission to help people and organizations live in a place where excellence becomes their average. He served 36 years in the South Dakota Army National Guard, rising from enlisted soldier to Brigadier General, and is a combat veteran of both Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom. Here is my interview with Mike Oster. Okay, I am here with Mike Oster, retired Brigadier General and veteran author, keynote speaker, Mike Oster. Mike, welcome to the American Pulse. It is great to have you on the show.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we are so excited. You're going to be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Lincoln Day dinner on March 14th, and we are so excited to have you. It is going to be an awesome event, and I just know you're going to be there inspiring the troops, and we're going to get into all that today, including your book that you wrote, excellent book called It Starts With Attitude, which is a bestseller. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. But before we really get going, maybe just give us a really brief background, like where you grew up, how long did you serve in the military and family, and where you reside now? Anything relevant to today's conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity to do that. I'm a happily married Christian man that has been married to the same woman, I'm happy to say, for 37 years. We've raised four kids. They're all adult, all out of college and on their own. A couple of them are married and have each given us two grandchildren. So we have four grandchildren. And we're just super blessed to have an amazing family, an amazing extended family with brothers and sisters and all those things. Grew up in South Dakota. I've been in the upper Midwest my entire life. We grew up on the east side of the state. Both my wife and I met in college, were married, and we moved out to the Rapid City, Black Hills region in Rapid City here about 25 years ago now, I guess. And that move was precipitated by my military career and obligations. I took a position that moved us out here. Mm-hmm. We thought we'd come out here for a few years, move back to the east side of the state because east and west South Dakota are very different. But we fell in love with the geography and the people and just everything that goes along with that. And so we've been out here ever since, and just super blessed to have an amazing military career, worked for some amazing leaders, and was able to lead some amazing soldiers and people along the way. So just feel like I've had an amazing life, and, you know, not without its challenges, certainly, like all of us. I've been through some things, but sometimes you got to go through it to get to it. And so we've been pretty blessed that way too. And our faith has helped us get through some of those challenges, and I just feel very blessed to be where we're at and have an opportunity now to go out and share some of the things I've learned over my 36-year military career, 37-year marriage, and all the different jobs and volunteer organizations I've worked with. And I get to go out and share those lessons learned and help people. My mantra is helping people to live in a place where excellence becomes their average by becoming better at who we are so we can be better in all we do. And so that's what I'm blessed to be able to do now.
That's fantastic. What a great backstory. You know, congratulations too on adulting your four children. I think that's a separate podcast episode unto itself, because people are kind of struggling with that a little bit right now. Like, how do I get the eagle to fly here, you know? So congratulations on that. You know, one of the topics I grabbed from your website and something that you speak on is embracing change. You have a talk I saw on there, embracing change. Change is awesome. And I think I am so fascinated with that topic because my experience, both for myself and for what I see in people at large or in the tribe, let's say, is most people brace against change, not embrace it. I think it's counterintuitive to how maybe the fight and flight response, where we want to stay safe first, you know, stay safe. And it can really start to be where you just don't take any risks. Every possible change that might be occurring might seem like a threat. And I can, you know, that's a personal statement for me too. I always have to work against my own desire to have a safe existence, because I'll have a really mediocre life if I never take any risks. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to just talk about the power of embracing change, because I have a feeling it's not embraced, you know, fully in our culture, let's say.
I couldn't agree more. You're spot on. The reason that the title of embracing change, because change is awesome. Change is one of those things. It's coming whether we like it or not, right? I mean, if you think back to when our parents grew up, thank goodness there's been some change, right? I mean, I don't have to walk uphill both ways to school in 3 feet of snow, carrying a baked potato to keep my hands warm, like my dad did, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and we're not in horse and buggy anymore. We're in a car, and we're not learning by candlelight. We've got light bulbs. And we embrace those change because they're changes of convenience. But the only difference between embracing that change and fighting change is our state of mind. It's just a choice. And again, whether we like it or not, change is coming. It's coming all around us. So if we make a decision to see change as an opportunity and we think of it as being awesome, if nothing else, we'll prove the way we were doing it was a better way. But when we see change opportunities or change coming, we just make a decision to love it, see it, embrace it, think about it as being awesome, and it's going to be so much easier to navigate with that positive attitude. And so we all know it can be hard, and there can be really tough things that come out of it, but how I go into it is just a mindset. And that's true of so many things in life, but change is a great way to practice getting an open mind, a mind of growth, rather than, you know, the opposite of that, a fixed mind. And change is a great place to do it because it's going to keep coming. And, you know, the cell phone that you're probably have in your pocket or on your table, that's a great example of what those started out being. And we had to carry them around in bags with external antennas to now what they are, the small little device that you can do pretty much anything on, you can do on a computer. That's just change, and it's going to keep coming. So it's just a mindset.
What one of the things that I notice, because it seems like things are, the change is happening very rapidly compared to when I was younger. I don't know if it's just because of the way that Trump, I mean, it's just like every week there is like some massive piece of news or some shift in the geopolitics. I think the nation, doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum you're on, I think we're the nation itself is bracing a little bit, because it's like, how fast is this moving? This seems to be rapid fire changes. It seems like there's, you know, within a 3 or 4 month span, there's events that used to be spread out over years. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that's true. Technology obviously has sped up change. The way that we get information, we get so much more information so much faster now. So we see a lot more of that change. But you have an aggressive administration right now too at the national level And they know that their time is limited and they only have so much time to make change. You know, there'll be a decision made in the midterm elections to see how effective their change can be. Mm-hmm. But then at the end of what will be the 4-year term, I mean, so it does have to come quickly. And so it probably is a little bit overwhelming for some, but again, it's an opportunity if we approach it correctly and we can be part of it and try to help mold it and make it successful. It's just a way better way to take it on, because it's coming, right? I mean, they're not going to slow down because people are a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, and yeah. So that's a good point.
We have to embrace it.
Yeah, you know, I know from reading your book that you highly regard resilience and perseverance as qualities. And as a man, I also hold these qualities in very high esteem. And I wanted to ask you, you've led, you know, lots of young men in your military service. Is perseverance and resilience, certainly military training is intended to cultivate those things, because that's what makes good soldiers. That's certainly the SEAL team is a prime example of that. But is that something that's in the DNA of a young man, or is that something that can be cultivated, or is it kind of both in your experience?
I definitely think it's both. I do think some people are more predisposed to be more resilient, and challenges and failure and getting knocked down affects them less. Mm-hmm. In their DNA, but it also can be learned. It can be coached. And, you know, the way that I was raised versus how I raise my kids has a lot to do with where I think our younger generation is at now. They're much more worldly. They're probably far more intelligent because of their access to different things. Mm-hmm. But we as Gen Xers and that kind of generation, we kind of protected our kids in my mind a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. And we didn't let them fail the way that maybe we should have. And we didn't challenge them or make them kind of learn. And I'm generalizing here, and this is not everybody.
Yeah.
But I do think there's some of that. And I saw that with soldiers, right? What the way we were recruiting, or the mindset of soldiers we recruited early in my career versus towards the end of my career, it was just different. Not better or worse, but less resilient, but had skills in other places. And so I do think that it can be coached and taught and it can be learned. And we do need more of it, because some challenges seem like they're so much worse or harder than they really are, just based on the mindset that we have when they.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I picked something out of your book that I thought was really great. It was, you mentioned something about overgeneralizing situations and people, and you said, you know, be cautious using terms like always and never. And I thought this was a really great point. And I think we overgeneralize the other in the political world. We're constantly overgeneralizing the other side, and we're being overgeneralized. Like, I resent that I'm, you know, an unkind person because I don't agree with somebody that's on the far left. Right. I don't like that. I don't like being overgeneralized as a conservative, but I'm guilty of overgeneralizing what I see on the left and mocking the left. And I don't like to be mocked, but I think this always and never, I think it's in our mindset, Mike. Like, it's a way to protect ourselves. We overgeneralize. So it kind of gives us an out, so we don't have to maybe have uncomfortable conversations. Like, so because I use always and never for a particular side of the political spectrum, then I don't have to actually get out of my comfort zone, to your point earlier, take the risk to have conversations where I might learn something about the left that I don't know, or I have to articulate my own views in a way that doesn't, that makes sense to them, and they might nod their head and like, I did not know that, you know? And so I think both sides lose out when we overgeneralize. And I wanted to give you a chance to talk about that, because I'm guilty of it. And, you know, been butthurt by the left. So I overgeneralize as a way to protect myself. Does that make sense?
It does. And you're exactly right. And, you know, if you think about it, this will seem like it's maybe not appropriate for this conversation, but it's extremist language. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the extremist language that we have going on in the country on all sides today, always and never are extremist language.
Yep.
Because it's almost impossible for those words to be true in actuality. I mean, to say somebody always does something or never does something, that kind of consistency would be pretty fantastic if we could actually pull that off.
Yeah.
So it's extremist language that, you're very right, it polarizes a conversation to where the conversation loses its efficacy because we're done listening, right? We start using words like that. And I can tell you, you know, I'd bragging about my 37 years of marriage, I'd be lying if I said it was all roses. And my wife and I have had the conversation about this extreme language of saying, well, you always do this or you never do this. And we will correct each other and say, that's a little extreme and not true. And it's, and that statement of correction is true in any conversation you're ever in on this, all the way up to what's happening at the national level that is making it harder to find compromise and win-win situations because of that extreme belief. And you articulated it very well, Tony. It's off-putting and it's offensive. And then we do it kind of back to try to protect ourselves as well. So it is, they're dangerous language. They're dangerous words. There's other dangerous words too, obviously, but these are always and never are words that should almost always or almost never be used.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and my wife and I, my wife of 30 years, we've had a similar growth with that as well. When we were younger, you know, we'd get really upset. It's you always do this, you never do that. And we needed to, you know, we needed some help. You know, we got it. We had a really great therapist when we were in New York City that kind of, you know, said, Hey, wait a minute. We don't use never and always, because that's never true. You know, and so it's
exactly.
And we still catch each other once in a while if something happens and like, oh, you know, we need to talk because we're triggered or whatever. But I think when you're triggered is when you start using those words, because, you know, you're just not, you're using extremist language, as you were saying. You know, I wanted to ask you, I had a question in there about art of war, and I don't mean anything necessarily, you know, brigades going in, you know, any of that. What I was talking about, I wanted to get your perspective on the sense of you live in a more conservative area than I do. I live in the 12th largest county in the country, and it is renowned in how liberal it is, right? It is a liberal city, as liberal as Portland or San Francisco or New York. And a lot of people around us conservatives, have an extreme case of Trump derangement syndrome. It is, and I've had some conversations with people that have Trump derangement syndrome that have been fruitful, but and when Trump first got into office and there was this kind of surge in the Republican Party of pro-America people that liked what Trump was doing, we kind of realized, hey, not everybody in the Republican, just because you have Republican next to your name doesn't mean we share the exact same feelings about Donald Trump or even the same values and hopes for the country, we found out. Which was surprising. We had a kind of a great deal of naivety when we first stepped in as local leaders. And by the same flip side of that coin, I think there could quite easily be plenty of Democrats that are a little tired of how extreme the woke left is. And they actually, if you talk to them, I bet there's quite a few that have very similar values and hopes for America that conservatives do. I bet there's a ton, but those conversations aren't being had because of what we talked about earlier, the extremist language and the silos we're putting each other in. And I guess I just wanted to ask you, like, how, like, navigating, it feels like a narrative war, and it feels like my side here in this blue area that we have to almost be like SEALs a little bit, like we're growing and we're trying to get our message out about the good things that are happening, but we got to be a little watchful, you know, because there's people that are in kind of, I don't want to say in close, but there's people that don't want to see us succeed, even in our own parties. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. And I think it really exemplifies the fact that because I come from a certain area, or because I have a certain name, or I have a certain tag, you know, Democrat, Republican, whatever. It's not absolute. It's sort of like the previous conversation on extreme language. It's not always or never.
Yeah.
And just because I'm a D or an R doesn't mean I have to think a certain way on every topic. Mm-hmm. And so I think as President Trump navigates what have been some very challenging topics and challenges that Some of which he inherited, some of which have been, you know, have come up, some of which have been around for a very long time. It's messy, right? I mean, it's hard to do the business of this country, and to remain the greatest country in the world is a challenge every single day. And when you get 300 plus million people in this country, you're going to get all kinds of differing opinions. And just having two classes of parties is not going to make only two opinions. And so I think you're exactly right. We have to look at everything that's going on, every situation, and every human being gets a chance until they've kind of shown where they're at and what they're thinking. And if more people believe that and were willing to have the conversation without prejudging or without pre-assuming, which is almost even more dangerous, I think we'd be in a better place. And I believe there are people resonating now more towards center on there are things that are just right. They're just absolutely right. How we execute might be still be in question, but what we're trying to accomplish, I think there's more agreement than we believe. Yeah. And so I'm hopeful that will continue. You know, I'd say President Trump is a president of peace, not of war. You know, he's ended 8 conflicts. He's continuing to try to build peace accords. He's trying to posture our country to be in places that are strategically intelligent and relevant to ensure bad things don't happen.
Yeah.
But that comes with some challenges, right? And you know, again, how it's done, yeah, you can question that or whatever. But the fact that some of these things should be done, I believe there's a lot more agreement on than we think, because we don't give ourselves a chance to see that and have that part of the conversation.
That's so true. Really, really well said, Mike. You know, and I don't consider Donald Trump to be without faults, or, you know, he's got all his stuff that sometimes I'm like, oh, okay, I don't really quite agree with that. And the reason I call him a wartime president, he is a peacetime president. He is committed to peace, but he is really taking apart the old globalist agenda. The old, like, you know, one world government, and everybody's like at Davos speaking the same language. I mean, they just went to Davos and said, no, we're not doing this anymore. We're pulling out of the WHO. We're encouraging all European nations to embrace their own sovereignty and not this globalist agenda. And so, and that comes with particular attacks on him and his team, I think, and it has been from the beginning. So that's what I mean. When I say wartime, I mean there's people that are violently opposed to what he's doing because the gravy train is drying up for them. I mean, they're going, like, look at what's happening in Minnesota with the Somalia, you know, that whole money laundering scheme. They're shutting off the spigot, and there is going to be people really pissed off about that, right? And it's kind of like, how dare you, you know, point out that there's all this corruption and that we've been, you know, bringing in all these illegal immigrants to go, you know, there's so much corruption, I think, that people almost can't believe the news that's coming out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you kind of articulated it, Tony, and even before we went live here on the, you know, it's more of an art of war, and it's what he's taking on, and you're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, these things are not popular sometimes, and they're messy. And, you know, when you say, hey, here's what I'm going to do if this doesn't get fixed, and then you actually do it, that's kind of new ground for this country with politicians. You know, we hear a lot before they get elected of what they say they're going to do. Then once they get elected, we hear what we're going to do. And after they're done, we hear what they didn't do. And so Donald Trump is an interesting politician, because when he tells you he's going to do something, he generally does it.
Yep.
And again, you can agree with it or not agree with it, but it's pretty standard practice that if he says, here's what's going to happen, it ends up happening. And again, you can argue about the methodology of implementation, but he's a man of action, and he says he's going to do something, he does it. And so there's been some messy challenges, as I said before, and they're not super popular. At the end of the day, what we as Americans, I believe, need to be looking at is the country stronger, or will it be stronger when we get this sorted out, when we get through these challenging... This country's been through some very tough times, civil war, civil rights movement, you know, all the things, and it's gotten really rough. And we have come out the other side stronger and better. And I think we're in a bit of a rough time, but I believe we're making the right moves that eventually will make us a stronger country, and we'll be stronger on the other side. And, you know, like a broken bone, men's tougher than it was. I think we'll be a better country than we were, but it's it's not going to be without its challenges and painful struggles along the way.
Oh, man, that is great messaging. I just love it. And I totally agree with you that, and I love how you frame that a little different than I've heard about, you know, reminding us that we've gone through patches where things weren't great. I mean, the Great Depression, all the different things that we've gone through. And here we are in another challenge, but we're Americans. And, you know, this is our time to persevere and be resilient and find resources and not forget one another. And I just love that. You know, you're going to be speaking at the Lincoln Day dinner on March 14th. And I know everybody is so excited to have you out. It's going to be an electric room. My wife, Lisa, is the fundraising auctioneer, and she's just a rock star up there. And she loves raising money for the causes. And this is one that she's particularly passionate about. And we're just really thrilled to have you. But not everyone can attend the Lincoln Day dinner. So for those of us lucky enough to be in the space with you and meet you and just be in that room, it's super inspiring as a conservative. I think in this area, we don't get a chance to get together with, you know, 250 of our best friends, you know, that are proud to be American and proud of the direction we're going and hopeful and all the things that you mentioned. But what would your message be for the people of King County and the state of Washington that maybe might be hearing this and would love to attend, but they can't make it for whatever reason. But they still want to maybe hear something. What you'd said already has been so inspiring, but is there any message for those that maybe can't be at the dinner that are feeling, especially those that feel like I've got nothing but liberals around me, like, help me. I don't know if you know, this is going in the direction that I'm hoping it goes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I could not be more honored to be coming up there in March for the Lincoln Day dinner. I'm super excited about that. I'm looking forward to meeting folks in person and spending time a couple of days on the ground there and just getting to know that area better. I had an assignment at Joint Base Lewis-McChord the last couple of years of my career. So I spent some time up there, more time in the Pacific Northwest than I had previously.
Nice.
And so I was very, that was a great privilege to be able to go up there. And you know what? I hope people will come out. I really do. I mean, organizations move when people show up. And so I hope people that are able to come will come. But for those that can't make it, I do have a couple of thoughts. One is, you know, every day we make choices, right? And the first choice we make in the morning is deciding who we're going to be that day. We get to wake up and decide if it's a good morning God or good God it's morning kind of day. Mm-hmm. And that's our choice, right? We wake up and we get to make that choice. And if we've put ourselves in the right position and we're doing the things that we should be doing, which hopefully we're working to make those things happen, we can make that first choice and make it a good morning God kind of day and set ourselves on the right path. And then Albert Einstein taught us a long, long time ago that one of the most important decisions we make as human beings is whether we believe we live in a friendly universe or a hostile universe. Now, he didn't ask if it was easy or hard, or he didn't ask if it was tumultuous or not tumultuous, because certainly there's been a lot of turmoil lately. But is it a friendly universe or a hostile universe? And basically, if I believe I live in a friendly universe, there's enough to go around. If I provide my inputs, I'll make an impact. I can take care of the people around me and myself, and I can have a good life. That's a friendly universe. A hostile universe are people that only see the negative in everything. There's not enough. They use words like always and never. They're everybody's out to get them. They have a very fixed mindset. Again, just a choice to live in that hostile or that friendly universe. Which one do you believe you're in? And we truly, you know, I truly very much believe I live in a friendly universe. Again, not easy. Not that it lacks turmoil, but it's a friendly universe. There's enough out there. And if I put my time in and make my effort, I can draw out of it. And then the final piece or the final thing, after we've had a good morning God day and decided we live in a friendly universe, every person around you, regardless of what you think their beliefs are, is a human being. And at any time in our life, we've either gone through something, we're going through something, or we're getting ready to go through something. And I don't know where you're at in your life's journey, but I do know that you're a fellow human being. And I do know that we live in the greatest country in the world. And so I get to choose how I interact with you. And if we make a decision that every interaction with every human being, regardless of their beliefs, if every interaction I have, I'm going to attempt to leave them with something from me that helps them be better then life is so much more fun to go through. And they're all just choices, Tony. We make these choices all day long. And if we just take a step back when we're starting to go down that negative road and say, whoa, I'm better than that. I'm a good Christian. I'm a good human. And I live in the greatest country in the world. And I'm going to go positive instead of negative. And that's putting ourselves in a position to make those positive choices makes an impact that is life-changing for so many other people, especially ourselves and the people we love. And that's how we deserve to live. And so that's the kind of thing I'm going to be talking about. That's the kind of thing I'm going to bring up there. Love and I'm super excited. And I get as much from these things, Tony, as I give. And so I'm super stoked to be coming up there.
Yeah, we can't wait to have you, Mike. Where can people, before we sign off, where can people find you and your book? It Starts With Attitude, and also maybe a way if people want to hire you as a speaker. Where's the hub of Mike Oster, and where can people find the book?
Yeah, the best thing to do is go to MikeOster.com, and that's Oster, O-S-T-E-R, MikeOster.com. They can find all kinds of information about me. They can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Excellence is Average. And then the book they can get on my website, or they can get it at Amazon, or it's also on Audible if they rather listen to a book than read it. So it's out there for sure. They can get them. And I would, and I'd love it if they do. And if, and hopefully they enjoy it. I had a great time writing it. Again, those are all lessons I learned from people way smarter than me. I've been very blessed to do that. And it was fun to put it down on paper.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, thanks so much for coming on the American Pulse and sharing your wisdom and your insights. It just was fantastic to speak with you. And we so are looking forward to seeing you in March, on March 14th. I can't wait to see and be in, talk to you in person, shake your hand. And we'll see you there. Travel safe. And until then, you take good care. God bless. And thanks for giving us time today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. What great tools Mike offered to help us navigate 2026. And for all the good people who love our nation and want to do their part, please come join us on March 14th at our Lincoln Day dinner at the Newcastle Golf Course, or just go to our website at www.kcgop.org to sign up for our newsletter, lend support to the cause, or find a good legislative district meeting near you that you can attend. And now for our last segment, a few words from our esteemed chairwoman, Jolie Lansdowne.
Hi, King County. Jolie here. What a gift. Wasn't that a great interview? We are in for such a treat this March with our retired Brigadier General Mike Oster coming to be our keynote speaker at our Lincoln Day dinner. That is going to be just such a great event for us. I appreciated when Mike was talking about culturally how we have more in agreement with each other than we think. I know I personally encounter that and experience that as I, you know, move throughout King County and meet different people groups and talk to people. I absolutely agree with that. So I loved him highlighting that. I'd like to take a moment to just thank everybody who supported us and supported KCR Media in our first year. We are now embarking on our second year, and this has just been a powerful opportunity to keep King County talking and communicating, and I'm just so encouraged. You know, I ask myself often, will King County be stronger and more unified by the work that we're doing? And I just continue to be encouraged, and I'm thankful to have met so many people that are hardworking and hope-filled, people that see the signs of change and are believing for it and holding the line, each of us doing what we can do with what we have in our area of influence and our area of authority to see our region restored. So I'm just very encouraged about what I'm seeing in local government. I'd like to just wrap us up today with a prayer and a blessing over our region. God, I just thank you for our stunning Pacific Northwest, this place that we love. God, let this year be one of renewal. It is time for our arising. Let us not be impressed by the chaos that we see, but press on in what we know. For your glory, God, is increasing in our land, no longer a city forsaken, but it is a time for this region to shine in excellence. And we will be the joy of many generations, abundant and restored and reformed. Yeah, there shall be no end to the increase of your government, God, a good and pure and sound and honest and just government. and there shall be no end to the increase of your peace, God. Your word says it is the zeal of the Lord which will accomplish this. And so I thank you, God. King County, let's just keep loving our neighbor well as we restore our home. We can do this. All right. In Jesus' name, amen.